You're listening to Björk Unraveled, a series that demystifies Björk's music one piece at a time. I'm your host, Savannah Wright. Hey friends, after a short break, I am now hard at work on season two. But to tide you over, I wanted to release two bonus episodes. These are previews of the new format I'm experimenting with for season two. Now that you've had an introduction to Björk's music, we can take a deeper dive into her work. And the first format I'm trying out is a listicle with a fellow Björk fan, because who doesn't love a good music countdown? For this episode, I teamed up with Elijah Flores.
I run the Instagram page, The Björk Collector, which over the last 5 years, I've been posting all the pieces from my collection, like a discography, like in order of release, like all the way through the most current releases.
Elijah's collection is comprehensive. He's been buying every Björk release since debut. That's when he heard Human Behavior for the first time and fell in love with her music.
That first track was like, whoa, you know, like I'm like, oh, this song is, I love her voice, I love it. And then, you know, I slowly pieced together, oh, this is the Sugar Cubes. I realized it was the same singer. And basically from then, I've been like a diehard Björk fan.
And his most prized collector's item?
The little hand booklet that Björk made, like, before the Sugar Cubes, or like right as Miklisa was starting. She made like a little poetry booklet, and there's 100 of them, and they're hand colored in with markers and crayon. And the one that I have is like in perfect condition. And that came from someone reaching out to me through my Instagram page.
As you can tell, Elijah is familiar with even the most obscure parts of Björk's career. So I wanted to bring him on to talk about some lesser known or maybe just underrated songs in Björk's discography. He'll share 10 of his picks here, and I'll add a few of my own. We'll start chronologically with her work in the Sugar Cubes.
The songs that I chose are like, I would say they're like 80% B-sides, and then the other like 20% are songs that like I think that really showcase the power of Björk's voice.
Yeah, so I think her voice is showcased in so many of her songs, but I guess these might be ones that people don't necessarily think of. Yeah, are the ones that people don't talk about enough. Okay, so the first one is from The Sugar Cubes, Effing in Rhythm and Sorrow, from Life's Too Good. Why did you choose this song? Like, what stood out to you about it?
I love it. I love it from the first beginning notes of this song. Just in my head, I see like a music video for this. It's never been made, or like a little stage play of Björk like running around on a stage set up. Like, just, it's such a fun song. I love the line when she's like, "Naked man, come down. I'll give you some strawberry cake." I love it. I love it. And then she goes into the whole shouting or screaming. I don't know even you call that. The Björk screams or the Björk shouts.
It's funny that you mentioned like a stage play, because it's totally felt like that to me. I could totally see this being kind of like a weird short play where it just sounds very jaunty to me, like just like a jaunty musical number, because she's like reacting in real time to what's
exactly
happening.
Exactly. I wish I could go back in time and direct a music video, because I see it like in a small theater on a stage with like cheap stage play, like background setups, and her acting out basically what she's talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it shows her complete emotional range. Like, when she's surprised to see the naked man, she has this like sharp intake of breath. She's like, oh, it's just so funny to like hear her react.
Naked man, calm down. I'll give you some strawberry cake. And then, you know, I can't remember the rest of the lines, but
yeah.
Oh my God.
Okay. The second one that you brought up from the Sugar Cube was Motorcycle Mama. Tell your daddy and your mama too. You've got something better to do. So stick around the house. Do you want to tell me about that song? What stands out to you?
I just love it. It's another, they did a couple covers. They did Top of the World by the Carpenters, which is also a good cover song for the Sugar Cubes. But this song, Motorcycle Mama, it's on a compilation album, Elektra's 40th anniversary. And this album has like The Cure and They Might Be Giants and like all these Elektra artists from the 80s doing covers of bands on Elektra from like the 60s and 70s. This was just like a folky song by a band called Sail Cat. And the original version is kind of folky and like, you know. You be the queen of my highway, my motorcycle mama. We'll see the world from my Harley. But the way that the Sugar Cubes do it, it's just a fun song. And the expression and emotion in her voice with the lyrics, and it's not like one of their original tracks, but I really like their spin on it.
Okay, so now we're talking about Bjork's solo stuff. And the first one that you wanted to bring up was Come to Me from Debut. What are some of the specific parts about this song that really caught your attention?
Oh man, this whole song. Looking back at Debut, this is definitely the standout track on that album for me. Like, this is more timeless than any of the songs on Debut now. When I hear Debut, it's like, okay, yeah, that's high school or whatever. Because a lot of those tracks are like dated to a certain time, but Come to Me, that will like always be for sure one of my favorites. And I just feel it's like an underappreciated song on Debut, or I hear people talking about it like the least, but.
No, I agree that the song is underrated. It's not one that I feel like a lot of Bjork fans will bring up, especially in regards to Debut. I feel like the main ones are Human Behavior and maybe Big Time Sensuality, like those two big singles. But I love the main synth riff. I feel like I agree that that one is more timeless than some of the other uses of synth on that record. And I love also how Bjork's vocals just kind of like are floating in this whole song. Like it just adds to that mystery.
Yes, like if anybody was going to sing a song to me, this would be the song and the lyrics that I would want to hear from someone. You know, this is like a beautiful love song to me.
Yeah, it is. You mentioned in our emails that you thought it, or you think it's her best love song, which I think is interesting because she is very like hard on her sleeve with a lot of her other love songs, but this one is a lot more restrained. Like she's saying, like, you know, I adore you, so let's not even talk about it. Like, don't
burst
the bubble.
Yeah, I'm gonna take care of you. I'm always gonna be there. Like, don't worry about it. I'm like, okay, I like all of this stuff.
Yeah, it's definitely more restrained, but I like that, and I think that it feels very cinematic to me. Even like when the strings and the tabla, that Indian hand drum, come in near the end. When I was looking into that song, of course, on the sidebar came the live version. And the live version is so incredible. Like, it honestly sounds like, and I already know she wrote a Bond song, but this could totally be another Bond song. You know, that I adore you. So let's move on then to another one on your list, which was
Carvel.
Okay.
It's, I would say, a classic B-side track on a single where it's like, okay, this is a good song, but it was chosen to be removed from the album for whatever reason. I think this was one of the first songs that she worked with Graham Massey from 808 State on. I believe this was like when they first got together and they were messing around in the studio or whatever. I think this is one of the first songs they wrote together and recorded over like a short period of time. So it was done quickly and kind of set as a side song, I think.
But yeah.
I do like it. It is very, it does have a very 90s feel to it.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. It has kind of like a 90s computer game sound almost. But I think the drums are really fun, especially when the drums kind of break down at the end. So the next one was I Go Humble. And I love this one as well. I'm curious what stands out to you about it.
This is just a great song. And I love the live version of it, especially on the Homogenic Live. She does mm-hmm. a version of this. And at the end, she goes into You Want to Be Started Something. Got to get started something. Got to get started something. I've always wondered if that was just, she did that like on the spot, like while she was singing and she just threw it in there, or there's like some other backstory for that on that live version, because I do love that.
Yeah, well, I do know that she loves Michael Jackson's music, or at least she did during that period. But I feel like this
right.
is one of those.
Which I have another, in one of my later songs, in one of my later picks, I have a hypothesis.
Oh, yes, yes, we will get to that. It seems like this is one of those songs, though, that is, like, I don't know how to describe it, except that there's like this steady build. And it's one of those songs that when you would hear it live, I could imagine the band kind of breaking out and doing their own like solos near the end, almost like jazz solos. So it kind of makes sense that they would riff it into another song almost, because it just has that nice like building quality near the end.
Right, and the beat's similar towards the end.
Yeah.
You know, if the beat is similar, so it kind of works.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so moving on into the next song, My Snare. Nature is ancient, but surprises
us. Yeah, I think it's a B-side on Bachelorette. Came as on Japanese pressings, it came as like a bonus song on Homogenic. And then later, the name of the song changed to Nature's Ancient when they did a music video. Lynn Fox did a music video for it. And I think it was kind of a later release, if I remember. And the video didn't show up until like just before Vespertine. It actually feels more like a Vespertine song than a Homogenic song. If you're gonna look at those two albums, this is like a good middle ground song between those two albums.
Yeah, for some reason, the melody of the song, at least in the chorus, reminded me a little bit of Medulla, at least the song Who Is It, which we're going to talk about later. But someone in the YouTube comments was like, I wonder what the song would sound like a cappella, and I could totally hear it. Like, it just kind of has that feeling of Who Is It, almost like a compliment to that track. So especially because there's so many vocal
layers.
I can
see that.
Yeah, so now we're kind of moving more into the Vespertine era with the song Domestica.
This one again is like great for a B-side. It just feels like Bjork at home. Like, I listen to this song a lot first thing in the morning sometimes when I'm just starting my day and making coffee and stuff like that. Because it just feels like that. And she's like writing a song in her head while she can't find her keys and the, you know, taxi's honking and she's like, oh. And it just feels like real. It just feels like a real life situation for Bjork, like a Bjork at home trying to find her keys.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. It's thematically, it's perfect for Vespertine because it's all about like just home and kind of mundane moments that are that she makes into beautiful moments. Sonically, I feel like it's not as sophisticated. It feels a little unfinished. I don't know if it's like the kind of computer gamey sound of the synth.
Yeah, I would call it like a more of a simple song. Just it's a very simple, like nice little melody, simple song.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it doesn't have as many layers of beats or vocals as other Vespertine tracks, but yeah, I do like just kind of the simplicity of it. I mean, not everything has to be complicated. But here's where I kind of want to insert a couple of songs that are from those B-sides that are on my list. First is Amphibian. There's this whistling sound in that track that reminds me a little bit of Morricone, the composer from like Fistful of Dollars. I don't know, it just has this kind of like mystery quality, but it's also perfect for Vespertine, like at least a Vespertine era song, because it has that. Because a whistle is something that you would just, you know, you whistle around your house. Like, it's like an instrument you would find in your house.
I agree. And like I said, Vespertine has a lot of B-sides. You think that album, that song could have fit on the track list for Vespertine? Or you think it feels appropriate to be a B-side?
I think it's better as a B-side. I don't know if it's like, I don't know, it's hard to explain. But I feel like it was maybe not as sophisticated again as the Vespertine tracks. Like, I think it has definitely more layers than Domestika, but it not quite enough to be like on the level of the rest of the Vespertine tracks. But I do think her vocals sound very cocoon-like in this one. They're very delicate and whispery, and I love how they're layered, especially at the end. I just feel like she continues to add more and more layers of vocals, and who doesn't love that? I mean, more Bjork, right? Another one I wanted to talk about from the Vespertine B-sides is Mother Heroic. So this one and the next one I want to talk about, it's interesting because they kind of have this like religious imagery in their lyrics. Like Mother Heroic definitely sounds like, I mean, if not like the Virgin Mary, because I know she's not Catholic, but it could be nature. It could be just, it just sounds very like reverent. And she talks about like the ecstatic face, perfect sorrows, coming onto your knees with a prayer. Come, we with a prayer. I mean, I don't really feel like I find other religious imagery in her other tracks on Vespertine, but it kind of works with that feeling that she has on the rest of the album of just being like really vulnerable around your lover and kind of like the ecstasy of being with them and almost like not worshiping.
Yeah,
them,
it's like
but
a more spiritual, emotional. Yeah, it's like a spiritual song versus like religious. I can feel that. But yeah, I mean, all of the tracks from like the Vespertine era all had a very personal and emotional feeling to them, for sure. So
Yeah, like they're intimate.
Yeah, very intimate and very personal.
Yeah. And what's interesting also about this song is it's just the music box. Like there aren't any choral voices in the background or beats really. It's just the music box. But I think that really focuses your attention on her voice. And so it feels very like wistful and nostalgic almost. Because, you know, music boxes, I feel like, is something you kind of associate with childhood. And so just to kind of wrap up this period, Generous Palm Stroke was another one that I really love. Again, there's some kind of like spiritual imagery. Like if I had just seen these words in isolation, I would have thought they were almost like a scripture where it's, I am strong in his hands. I am beyond me on my own. I'm human and I do faults. But we know that she's not talking about God. She's talking about like the person that she's with, her love. And so, again, it's kind of like that infatuation and intensity of being with someone where you feel like, oh, you complete me. Like,
Exactly. I mean, these are great love songs. I definitely feel you on that.
Yeah, especially I love the live version because it's just her and the harp. And so it doesn't have kind of like the layers from the recorded version, which are also beautiful. But I love that with this, with just her and the harp, it's like you really just focus on those two sounds. And the harpist is like incredible. Like everyone should go and watch that. The way that she has to like kind of recreate the glitchy harp of the recorded version with just her hands.
I remember hearing it and being like, oh, okay, that's a good B-side track, and kind of putting it off at the time. And then I remember seeing, you know, Vespertine Live and the Best Of tour. And I think that song grabbed me more hearing it and seeing it live. So I'm like, oh, yeah, like I forgot about this song. It's like on a single. And like that was like a huge push to go back to that song and be like really appreciate it after I saw it performed live.
I love when that happens too, when you see an artist live and then they give you like a newfound appreciation for a certain song that you kind of overlooked. I think it's really special. So the next song that we were going to talk about is from the Greatest Hits album. It's In Our Hands.
Yeah, I just like the little crunchy beats in it, and the video is great. She's like got a little pregnant belly, a little bug going through the grass or whatever. It's just a good, fun song that I don't think gets enough love.
Yeah, I agree. I really love the synth melody on this one, and the layers of the beats. It kind of has that Vespertine feel where it's not like one dominant beat, but it's a bunch of micro beats that are fun.
Layered beats and like, you know, like just the little crinkly sounds that make up the beat in this track. I love it.
I'd also say it's pretty accessible. Like, I feel like it's upbeat. It has a pretty memorable chorus. Like, I wouldn't say that for a lot of her songs, but this one I could hear on the radio, honestly.
That was actually one of my other notes. I remember this got a lot of radio play when it first came out. I remember hearing on the radio quite a bit. I'm like, whoa, this is cool. Like, they're playing Bjork on the radio a lot. And it seems like a little bit more radio hit, like more friendly for like a general audience. For people who think Bjork sounds weird or whatever, for those poor unfortunate people, like, this is a great song. Listen to this. Maybe this will make you like more of her songs. It's in our hands.
So the other one, we're kind of going down to medulla, Oceania. What made you choose this song as an underrated song? Because it is from a major album.
It is a major album, and there's a single for it and everything. But this one really stood out to me. You can hear all the sampling of the backup vocals and the choir and the sweeping sound of the vocals, of the background vocals, and her voice on top of it. It sounds like ocean waves crashing. Her voice sounds like ocean waves crashing into you and like knocking you over, you know? And she opened up the Olympics with this one. I remember like she opening ceremonies for 2003 Olympics or something like that. But yeah, and this one, it just gives me like, it always gives me goosebumps. Like I'll put this song on and just her voice, just, I'm getting goosebumps right now just thinking about it. I love it.
Yeah. I would say this does feel like a gateway into medulla for me because I have not listened to medulla as much just because parts of it I kind of I haven't clicked yet. But
Let the one throat singing track throw you off. There's like the one throat singing track that's like, I don't want to.
It's also like the opening track. Like, I don't know. Just there's some parts where, and I will say even in this one, the background vocals that you mentioned where it's like da 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 da, like it imitates strings really well, which I think is cool, but the sound itself like makes me a little bit anxious.
It, like I said, it feels like a roller coaster, like I'm riding waves of Bjork's vocals or something.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think I will come to love it. I think
yeah,
I just
if need it's
to
underappreciated, get adjusted to medulla once you get the feel of medulla. I'm sure you'll love it.
I will say though that the beatboxing on these tracks, like this one and the next one we're going to talk about, is like so impressive that it can really imitate the types of beats that Bjork does. So yeah, let's transition now, I guess, into the last one, which is Who Is It, the Bell Choir mix from medulla. You mentioned you get goosebumps from this song too. What is it about this song?
I love the standard track on the album, but this Bell Choir version, which is like also the music video version, I like a little bit better. It just, I like the bells and I like, you know, versus the standard track. But on this, I love the lyrics. This is another like come to me lyrical song. This is not a love song, but it's more of like, who is it who never lets you down?
Mm-hmm.
You know, type of lyrics. It's just a very hopeful and lovely song. This may be my own opinion, but I can totally hear like Michael Jackson singing this song. And in my head, I've always wondered what if Michael Jackson covered this song, like what it would sound like, because not that she's singing like Michael Jackson or anything like that, but it feels like I could hear Michael Jackson singing in his own inflections and his hee-hees and all that stuff. It feels like a Michael Jackson song to me.
I think I can hear it too. And I don't know if that would have come to mind if you hadn't said it, but I now hear what you mean. I think it might be how this chorus feels very anthemic to me. Like it feels like it's kind of like, you know, something that people are meant to sing along to and really kind of rally around. And
yeah,
that's all of Michael Jackson's.
Over, handing it over. Like all of that part.
Yeah, because I don't think Bjork has that many songs that feel that way, like anthemic to me. I feel like this one is a little bit unique there. I also hear there is a slight vibrato when she sings Who Is It? Like, who is it? That I could hear Michael Jackson sing because
right,
he does
right.
that too.
that never lets you down. That part too, and yeah, there's bits in there that definitely give me like Michael Jackson vibes, and I love Michael.
Yeah, he has some really great stuff. I'll have to look more into that. I'm curious because I know that Alarm Call was inspired by Michael Jackson, but I'm not sure if other songs were, or maybe she hasn't talked about it and it was just kind of subconscious. But I wanted to end with one question, which I like to ask everyone I talk to, and it's why does Björk's music matter to you personally? You've mentioned her voice and how you really connect to her voice, but is there anything else that you think causes you to go back to her music again and again and even want to collect it all?
Oh man. All right. Well, I'll be really honest, and I generally don't talk about this. I've always loved Björk, and Vespertine is definitely my favorite album, but I think that has a lot to do with I had a friend who tragically died in a car accident just before Vespertine was released. And that was obviously like a huge thing for me, really turned my life upside down. And when Vespertine came out, Vespertine just came out at right at that right time. I was like 2 months after he passed away, and it was just Vespertine was like, I would say, the album that like basically saved my life. Or, I listened to it every day for like 2 years. Like, it was just the album that like I just fell in love with. It was what I needed at that time, and it just helped me through like some really dark times. That made me fall in love with Björk even more than I already did. I had bought all the other albums prior and listened to was loved them all, but Vespertine was definitely the one that made me go all in on Björk. So I've been trying to tell everybody, listen to Björk, since then.
A huge thank you to Elijah for coming on the show. You can follow him on Instagram at TheBjerkCollector. I hope you discovered a few Björk songs that you're now going to play on repeat. I know I did. Heads up, I made a YouTube playlist of the songs we discussed, and you can find it in the show notes. Now, listicles are fun and everything, but you know I also like to get in the weeds. So in the next episode, I'll deconstruct the astrology of Pluto with another Björk fan. I touched on that song a bit in episode 3, but it's worth a closer listen. You can find that in your feeds in 2 weeks. You've been listening to Björk Unraveled, a series that demystifies Björk's music one piece at a time. Björk Unraveled is produced independently by me, Savannah Wright. If you liked this episode, please share it with a friend and submit a review on whatever podcast app you're using. If you have an idea for a future episode, tell me about it. You can find me on Instagram at Björk Unraveled. I'm Savannah Wright. Thanks for listening.